everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the Message Podcast of Friends Church. My name is Gregory, and I'm one of the team members here, and we're so glad that you're joining us. It's been really encouraging to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening in. We really do hope that our messages are resonating with you. We also wanted to say a quick thank you to those who are contributing to Friends Church. All of the things that we're able to do is because of people who donate regularly. Even small, consistent gifts help a lot. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that, especially if it's been beneficial in your journey. To do that, it's really easy. Just go to the website, friendschurch.ca, and click the Donate tab. Or better yet, download our Friends Church app and click on the Give tab. Thanks so much for tuning in, and enjoy this week's message.
Growing up, I hadn't really been exposed to too much pornography. My real exposure came when the internet was put in our house. And if I was really honest with you, I had heard that this thing called the internet, you could go on and you could search out and you could find pornography. I'm a pastor. I'm happily married, but there was a side of me that was going, ooh, I wonder what that's like. Before I get into this, this might make some of you like squirm and uncomfortable. Well, you think about me, okay, for a second, all right? So let's all be a little bit uncomfortable this morning, but maybe just trust me on this journey this morning. I think you're going to be glad that you're here or that you're able to hear what I have to say. From the time I was young, it was instilled in me that seeing naked women or people having sex was kind of bad, dirty. I could tell just because whenever some kind of love scene came on TV, my mom was wanting to switch the channel. No one ever told me you should never look at pornography. I don't remember it anyways, but there was a sense of, oh, this is a bad, bad thing. When the internet got installed in my home, I did go searching for it. The curiosity was killing me. When I found it, I got to admit, it felt pretty cool. It lit me up. Like, you want to talk about arousal, it did that. And it was like this drug that was just like, wow, this is amazing. I couldn't wait for moments when I could go back. Now, it was dial-up internet at that time, so it was a slow, painful process, but... Day came when Kathy discovered it on the computer, and the impact that that had on her, I had not anticipated. I didn't want her knowing what I was looking at because I didn't think that she would understand or appreciate any of it, but it decimated her. It was such a dark, dirty thing. I know she looked at me like I was some kind of deranged pervert. And I almost felt like I must be. Because I was actually willingly looking at this stuff. And internally, I would look at it. And then I'd walk away and I'd look up to heaven. I'd say, God, forgive me for that. I don't know what my problem is or whatever. And then it was just like this cycle. When she found out and the whole thing blew up, I wasn't sure what would happen. She didn't want to touch me. She thought I was, like I said, some kind of pervert. Took a long time to rebuild the trust that I once had with her and the intimacy that we shared. As we worked through all of that painful journey, the advice that I began giving to others along the way was steer clear of that stuff. Just a lot of bad can happen. And that was kind of my approach whenever someone asked, was just sharing, that was my bad experience, and hey, it can lead to all kinds of world of hurt. So then if you fast forward about 9 years, it was about 2009. We are doing a series on sexuality at Friends. And we invite a sex therapist to join me on stage that I want to interview. And we haven't walked through everything that we're going to talk about. We had some ideas. But then what we did is we encouraged everyone in the community, if you had a question that you wanted to ask her, go ahead, text it in. Our multimedia team would put it up on the screen behind us. And as we're talking, I'd look up and go, hey, answer this question. Well, sure enough, the question comes up, is porn healthy? What about porn? Is it healthy? That was the question. And I saw the question, I just went, ooh. But in my mind, I kind of thought I knew the answer. And I thought, well, I know what she's going to say, so I might as well just throw it out to her. Well, she shocked me. She didn't follow the party line. She didn't answer whether it's morally right. Like, there's none of that. She simply answered the question as best she could as whether or not it's healthy. First of all, she didn't treat it like it was some kind of perverted activity. Actually, she said that pornography, or erotica as it's more commonly called, can be helpful for some. Well, I almost fell off my chair. My heart was raised. I was squirming up there. People could tell. They're like, Jeff, you look like you're dying up there. I'm like, ah, I didn't expect her to be saying that. This wasn't a plant. I wasn't. But she was saying, actually, it can be healthy for some. It can stir up creativity in the bedroom, she said. It can show people different ways of experiencing intimacy and pleasure. It has and can offer some instruction for some, showing ways to spice things up. She explained how for some it's actually destigmatized sex, increased levels of sexual communication for some. She said, I've watched how for some it's got people talking more about their own sexual preferences, what they like, what they don't like, in a less awkward way, sometimes in a humorous way. It's not them talking about, well, I don't like it when you do this or do that. They're kind of looking at a screen and going, now that's a turnoff. Don't be, and they could laugh about it. She said in some cases, it's even helped people understand more about their own sexual orientation. Well, I have to say, as she was talking about this, like, I couldn't even hear what she was saying. I had to go back and listen to the tape later because I was in this thing of people are going to march out of this place. What kind of church would allow that to be said on? That was where we were at 2009 here at Friends. How can she be saying these things? I mean, especially for those of us who have grown up all our lives being taught that any form of pornography or pornographic images are evil. She's saying it's healthy. But it wasn't just for the religious people in the crowd. You know, what about the feminists who have always stood against pornography, saying it is oppressive toward women? So much of that industry has hurt women. What would they be thinking in that crowd? What about all the woke guys that are going, no, that stuff, no way. I don't support that. What about all the good girls that have been raised to believe, no, sex is bad and I don't touch that stuff and it's not right for a woman to be sexual or what? Like, I'm just, in my head, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to go wrong in that crowd. Yet as that woman spoke, there was something about what she was saying. She made it clear that there is something inside all of us that is drawn to sexual imagery. She says, you can deny it. You can pretend. You can act like, oh no, that has no hold on me. No, you look at that stuff and it's like a lightning rod for most. And whether it's visual imagery or whether it's a book that's a romantic novel, 50 Shades of Grey, that's lighting you up as you read a literary piece of sexual art, this thing grabs us. That's why the entertainment industry is selling it all day long. That's why commercial stuff on TV is using it to sell. Why? Because it has a power that's woven into our DNA. She's going, you don't have to agree with me. It does something to us. Yeah. So as she's talking, I'm just like, yeah, well, that's true. She said it's normal and it's not perverted that it does something to you. I remember getting off that stage that day and just going, whoa, she is something else. And I kind of was expecting people to be lined up going, it's been nice knowing you, Jeff, but if that's what this church is about, I'm gone, whatever. Surprisingly, that wasn't the story. More and more people kind of stepping out of the woodwork, talking about their own experiences. Over the next few years, I began to realize that therapist represents a growing portion of our society who have observed and experienced some positive even of erotica. Surprisingly to me, especially, even women. In fact, as I've been doing research over this last little while, the category of users, I was shocked to see this. Category of users marking the greatest increase in consumption of porn right now, women. I heard stories like that of Jenny. Jenny grew up in a very religious family, always being taught sex was dangerous, if not dirty, till you're married. So she, being a very good Christian girl, avoided all kinds of sexual behavior, including masturbation, nothing that would cause sexual arousal. Jenny ended up being married for years, never having experienced an orgasm. It wasn't until her and her husband went to a sex shop, purchased a sex toy. They didn't say, but I think it probably was a vibrator, probably. And it came with erotic pornographic DVDs. She said she popped those DVDs in and she began watching them and watching them and watching them. She described how instrumental those videos were in helping her experience what would be her first of many orgasms. She said those videos revolutionized her sexual life. They revolutionized her marriage and the intimacy that she experienced with her husband. This was the wife of a prominent Christian leader. Remember hearing that story, I'm just like going, wait, what? What do you do with a story like that? Here's a spiritual couple whose sexual relationship was transformed by the use of erotica. You know, even if you're the most ardent opponent of pornography, you hear a story like that and you go, wow. Well, suppose in that case, that's a head scratcher. So I'm reading stuff like that and researching and trying to wrestle with. But then very quickly, my cognitive dissonance ended when I began reading just about how misleading much of the porn industry really is. I mean, most of the online porn being consumed depicts actors and actresses who are far from your average normal Joe or Jolene. We're talking completely unrealistic and overblown portrayals of human bodies, many of whom are surgically enhanced or possess abnormal genitalia, many depicting scenes of male-dominated sex that is not pleasurable, that is often painful for those involved. There is a lot being written right now about the very unrealistic and even harmful expectations that are being created for people, especially young kids who have never experienced actual sex with another person. Their whole understanding of sex and sexuality is being shaped by the pornography they're watching often on their phones. Research suggests that watching hardcore porn over an extended period of time has been correlated with nearly a six-fold increase in the likelihood of young men self-reporting sexually aggressive behavior. Many stories are being told of men trying to coerce their partners into performing various sexual acts that they had seen in porn. You know, you start reading through the stats of the way that the porn industry is shaping expectations, especially of younger and younger generations. And I'm telling you, it gets frightening in a hurry. So So there's Jenny's story, and then I flip over to that, and these unrealized, and then I'm just like going, oh my God, that is disturbing. And then, but then I would read a story like that of Rena Skye. I heard this story, who is a sex worker, performs live webcam shows for clients off of her own website. She's paid directly by her clients. She doesn't have the male-dominated porn industry telling her what she has to do or what she doesn't. She's her own boss. And she says her favorite shows are for clients who have severe mental and physical disabilities. She said these are people who have never had or been able to experience intimacy with another person in a sexual relationship. Many of them never will. She says you can't know how satisfying it is to know that you're giving something to a person they'll never experience, that most others will. With this new form of digital erotica, Rena Skye is able to give people a safe sexual experience otherwise they would not know. I hadn't even considered that before. Yeah, what about those people? Got me thinking about even couples who are committed to each other, but one of them gets really sick. And their sexual life begins to evaporate. What then? What then for the other partner? That's complicated. That morning, 2009, when I'm interviewing the sex therapist, after she starts talking about some of the benefits, I mean, I after I kind of compose myself and I'm coming back to, I ask her, okay, so is there a kind of porn out there that you would recommend? I couldn't believe I asked that. I'm sure there's gasps in the crowd. After it was coming out of my mouth, I'm like, oh, I might regret having asked that. I think I told her, go easy on me, all right? Like, just... She immediately began speaking of amateur porn. Out of curiosity, was anyone there back in 2009 when I did this talk? Okay, there's a few of you. All right, good. All right. She said, amateur porn, Jeff. She said, a lot of the big porn sites out there are male-owned. They're dominated by men. They're exploitative toward women. They're focused predominantly on just the male viewer. She said, beware of those sites. But she said, there are these number of amateur websites. This is pornography not created by professionals, rather by individuals and couples who on their own accord set up a camera and film themselves, celebrating what they experience and wanting to share it with others. They're not doing it for money. These are people most often with very realistic, everyday bodies. Couples who are often in actual committed relationships who demonstrate high levels of respect and mutuality and deep intimate connection with each other. And that's what's revealed in this. She said, this is a lot different than the mainstream porn, most of it that's out there. Okay. Well, thank you for answering that, Ms. Therapist. I'll note that. You know, in my research, though, that is not as what is being consumed by and large. You know, in a perfect world, everyone that's searching up porn would only find that stuff. They would only consume the kind of erotica and experience the best that it has to offer. But according to the stats, this isn't the most common form that's being consumed. Most is not ethically sourced, powered by the actual sex workers. What's really disturbing is just how strong and compulsive, once you get into this other stuff, into the world of erotica. What it begins to do for those that are viewing stuff that isn't of a healthy sense. Here's how a guy that I'll call Josh described his experience with porn. He said, when I was going to college, I couldn't wait to get home to look at more porn. Whenever I could, I would go quickly downstairs, so I'd watch it on my phone. At night, I would spend 3 or more hours watching it. It was a never-ending cycle of compulsion. What's worse is my porn viewing only got more disturbing. I admit that I went from so-called vanilla porn to what could be considered sexual violence or rape porn. I even noticed a change in my behavior. I was more irritated, more depressed, more socially awkward, suffered from anxiety. At school, I'd catch myself staring at women in like a creepy fashion, objectifying them. At the gym, I would spy on girls working out around me, thinking of everything I'd seen online. He said, honestly, my behavior was so bad, my parents didn't want to deal with me anymore. I didn't even want to deal with me anymore. He said, I suffered from severe depression. I hit a wall when I couldn't sleep at night without consuming porn. I felt completely and totally alone, like no one else in the world was going through what I was going through. One night, I almost committed suicide, and a few friends stopped me by talking with me over the phone. I knew I had to stop this. When you read the current research on porn's effect on the human brain and what this guy was even experiencing, it is frightening. Especially with the evolution of high-speed internet, what they call supernormal stimulation of our sex drive. Where literally a person with high-definition, high-speed internet can scroll and cycle through hundreds of different images and videos depicting all kinds of different sex scenes and sexual partners in such a short amount of time. It's the equivalent of probably like days and days of watching a movie or looking through magazines. It's just ultra stimulation. So potent that literally the arousal can stay there for hours. Which is likely why research now is showing that heavy internet porn consumption can change the neural pathways of a person's brain, causing sexual compulsion, like this guy experienced, hormonal changes, and sexual dysfunction. So that when a porn user actually goes to have sex with a real person, there isn't enough stimulation, enough arousal in that experience, physical stimulation in a physical sexual environment that they can become sexually aroused. I'm not talking about a rare occurrence. I'm talking about something that's becoming very common. Abraham Morgenthaler, a Harvard urology professor, he wrote the book, Why Men Fake It. He said, it's hard to know just how many young men right now are suffering from porn-induced erectile dysfunction. But he said, it's big, and it's getting bigger. Harry Fish, another urologist and author, he says, oh, porn is fine as an occasional treat, but it's hell for your sexual health on a daily basis. That's what health specialists are finding about the effects of porn on our bodies and our minds. Heavy porn users of all ages, if you start doing research, start poking around, you begin realizing there's huge movements of young, predominantly male guys who have encountered exactly what I just told you about. They're experiencing incredible problems. The compulsion is taken over. It's affected their attitudes and behaviors, their emotional well-being, their sexual lives. And now you'll hear, if you look very carefully, you'll hear about this no-fat movement, which has all kinds of different degrees within it, but literally guys that are swearing off porn. Most recently, maybe you did, read about Kanye West, who was one of the biggest advocates of porn for so long, Pornhub. He was like a sponsored ambassador for Pornhub. All of a sudden, he's coming out and going, I'm out. Lamar Odom. Like, there's all these high-profile athletes and celebrities that are going, I'm out. This stuff is doing stuff to me. I can't get behind anymore. Now, for any other reason, we're not talking about even spiritual, moral, whatever. We're talking, this is affecting their lives in a very real way. This no-fat movement, I went on their website. This is a secular, sex-positive movement that is saying, be very careful about the impact that porn can have on your life. Very careful. And it's encouraging guys to go off it. Science now is saying that guys can go from this almost addicted state in porn. And I'm speaking of guys, forgive me, because women are in the, can be as involved and as addicted or compulsed by it, compulsively, as men. But a lot of my research was on the men, so forgive me for that. But they're saying that actually as these guys go off it, new neural pathways can be created and that there's help. Actually, their health can come back. Great news. But this no-fat movement has it's gone big. It was featured on The Doctors, the daytime television show, featured on Lisa Ling's big show, This Is Life. Huge movement. The underbelly of the porn industry, this what they consider $97 billion industry, is having effects that now it seems there's the pendulum is swinging and people are going, whoa, that there, taken to an extreme, can be extremely dangerous. I know that there will be some who will listen to this podcast and say, well, why aren't you talking about what the Bible has to say about this? I mean, doesn't the Bible clearly say it's just morally wrong? Shouldn't it just end right there? Let me just speak to that for a moment. The verse that is most commonly used to outlaw pornography on moral grounds is Matthew 5:28. Jesus talking, he says, anyone who even looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Think about that verse for a second. How many of you have ever looked at someone beautiful, sexy, read something and went, wow, been watching a movie and went, oof, man, I wouldn't mind you rewinding that scene. Huh? Oh, no, I'm not going to ask you. If you have, you're an adulterer. Is something morally wrong with looking at someone and being sexually turned on by them? I mean, this natural drive inside of you, that you see, you acknowledge someone that's putting out the sexual vibe and you feel something, is that adultery? If you read this literally, it seems Jesus only seems concerned with married people who are lusting after married women, it seems, or single people who are lusting after married women. Basically, so we're dealing with straight men or maybe lesbians. I guess they're the problem. If you're a heterosexual woman, you're off the hook. You're good. Or if you're a gay guy and you're never ever lusting after a woman, you're in the clear too. Lucky gun, son of a guns. You can find all kinds of problematic pieces in this verse when someone attempts to use it as some kind of universal hammer against pornography, sexual arousal. Actually, if you go back in the passage, if you kind of rewind and you see this speech that Jesus was giving, even back to verse 21, Jesus says, you're familiar with the commandment, don't murder. Yeah, he says, I'm telling you, anyone who has so much been angry with their brother or sister, you're guilty of murder. How many has ever been pissed off with your brother or sister? Murderers! This is called hyperbole. Jesus, throughout this speech, Sermon on the Mount, he uses this technique. We parents, we use it all the time. When our kid is doing something, we say, you do that again. I swear, I'm gonna ground you for a year. Well, I'm never gonna ground my kid. I couldn't handle that. But we do that. Why? We're exaggerating a point to make a very strong point, right? That's exactly what I think Jesus has been doing a number of times in this passage, including this one about committing adultery. You look at someone, you get turned on sexually by them. Have you committed adultery? I'm not sure you have. What could he be getting at? It's anyone's guess, and a lot of people taking a run at this. I sometimes wonder if Jesus wasn't observing people, perhaps obviously women in his culture, who are suffering as sexual objects. I wonder if Jesus wasn't warning people of the dangers of the sexual drive and would become so out of control that we use and we abuse other people in our lives to achieve some kind of selfish end. I wonder if maybe he wasn't making a real strong point to get at something like that. I wonder if he wasn't saying, look at relationships suffer, marriages are jeopardized, dignity is lost. There's a lot at stake when you take that to it, its extreme end. Could that be what Jesus was getting at? Well, I can't prove that. Does all pornography lead to that end? Well, I can't prove that either. I've already shown you some cases that doesn't necessarily lead to that end. You know, as I'm kind of putting all this stuff together, I'm looking at kind of arguments back and forth and writing this week, I'm going, oh, geez, I'd love to be able to summarize this in a real clean way that we give everyone kind of a mandate on what to think or believe. But you know as well as I know that this is one complicated beast. We don't know whether this is healthy for you or for you or for you. Some people have been able to use it in a healthy way. I talked to them. And others have had their lives ruined by it. I think your healthy response to porn will likely depend on all kinds of factors. I will say this, based on your age, I could make a pretty unequivocal statement. If you are younger, and I don't even know what younger should be, research is still early. But if you are kids, if you're teens, I would say even if you're in your early 20s, the science right now is so disturbing about what this is doing to young minds. That I could look at the parent of any kid and just say, do everything you can to have some big conversations with your kids right now. I wish I knew. I wish I knew back when my kids started getting smartphones, I wish I knew back then what I know now. Had a huge conversation with my son last night. Oh, I wish I could go back and just go, hey, look at guys. What you're about to see, and you will see it. Your friends will introduce you to all kinds of different stuff. You will find it. You got a smart, you will find it. And you will be attracted to it. And that doesn't make you a pervert. But be careful. Be careful, because what that stuff will do to you is scary. Stay away from it. Do your best. I think it'll depend on your age, whether you're partnered or not. If you are partnered, this is going to require some very important conversations, because just based on what I've personally experienced and what I've read, if you can't come to some really sincere, heartfelt, confident agreements that are authentic on both sides on what role porn will play in the relationship or individually, it can prove costly. Just a warning. Big conversations there. Your response to porn might depend on whether your partner is sick or incapable in some way. That could play a huge factor. Oh, man, there are just so many different complicating factors here. I could go on and on. I'm telling you this, there is no right or wrong answer here, but it is based on who you are and what you understand about your sexuality and who you're in relationship with. I am not going to tell you. I can only warn you about what I've read. And I pray that as you explore your own version of healthy sexuality in your life, that in this area, you'll just proceed with caution. Some of you here listening to me today, or perhaps on this podcast, already know some of the dangerous sides of porn. It's led you perhaps down a destructive road. What may be healthy for you is to get free from it. To stay as far away from it as you can get. Oh. But there's hope for you. There's hope. I'm hoping today that as we break the silence on this subject, in this kind of way, we just talk about pornography, which has been such a taboo subject in so many religious circles. And as we begin talking about the excitement and the power of it, the incredible lure and temptation of it, and the beauty of it, and the dangers of it, and the pitfalls of it, and that we do all of this in a judgment-free, shame-free environment that is free of ridicule, but with openness and honesty and understanding and intelligence, that in the end, young and old, every one of us, regardless of where we sit in our life, regardless of every sexual orientation, that we will all experience beautiful, vibrant sexual lives, that we will develop our own sexual ethic around pornography that doesn't hurt, that only builds something beautiful. That's my prayer for each of us. It's my prayer for you. All right, I'm done. Next Sunday, Tom Morris kicks off our two-part addiction series, Love Your Addict Neighbor. You need to invite some friends and be there. I pray this week as you go out, as you think about it, I hope I stirred up a bee's nest of conversation for you. Man, that dinner table is going to, I'd love to be a fly on the wall for some of that. Don't you stop talking about this. This is an area that needs thousands of cups of coffee. Huh? Where we just sit and we talk and we explore. Pray that for each of you. Have a great week.